You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
Yes, on 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, there we also archive all the shows. Hit the on-demand button, and any Monday you can pick for Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. But of course, we download all of that and we share it on all of our social medias, as well as our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com. And there you can search by topic and search by name, a little bit easier than just necessarily picking a date. And then, of course, all of that social media information is the bios and all the great information and pictures about all the great guests that you always seem to find, Sita, in this big, wide, wonderful world of ours.
Well, you know, I think you get back in life what you put out.
Amen.
And I once had someone who said to me, why do you talk to so many people? What do you get out of this? Why do you attend so many events in town? And why do you waste your time and money? And I'm like, well, I have a purpose in life.
Education.
And when you meet people and you talk to people, you might attend an event with 100 people, but if you zero in on two or three people, they have a story to tell. Mm-hmm. They have something that they're doing that's interesting. And if everyone thought that way and said, I don't want to talk to people of different cultures, different religions, different events, the haves and the haves not, we wouldn't really have a good world because we would live in a bubble. Mm-hmm. And so I said to that person, whatever floats your boat, good for you, but this floats my boat.
Right.
And so you're right. I enjoy, trying to get quality guests for Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And it's awesome to sit here every Monday with Danny running our board and you, Ellen O'Neill, my co-host, who's been with the show for 15 years. And I know you're busy with your band, and God bless you. You're doing so wonderful with your singing, and everyone loves you in town, but it's such an honor and a privilege to work with you and have you still on the show.
As well as you. And
thank
we
you.
Get to meet all these fantastic people every week and get an education in their lives as well, which again gets us out of that bubble for sure.
Right. And then for listeners who are tuning in, we also have Allie. Allie comes with us every Monday and she sits here with us and chats and listens and sometimes gives us her input. And today's no different. So if someone is listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, on Mondays, we sit here and we chat with people right here in Brevard County, Florida. We talk with people around the state and we talk to people around the world about whatever it is they want to talk about to make the world a better place. And I do believe it's our inherent right to talk to people, find out different ideas, and let them know that we care about things like financial literacy. We care about people who are writing a book, reading a book. Somebody wants to tell a story. We talk to folks who want to talk about solar energy, why we should vote. We speak to people on our radio show. Sometimes people have a family member who was abused, or maybe they have something to talk about, elderly abuse, like we had last weekend. Last week, we spoke with Seniors Helping Seniors. I mean, I can't say it's a song and dance variety show. It's a talk show. And we give people a platform to call in on to sit here on our show and talk with us and share valuable information. And so the show is unscripted. It's fun. It's educational. And yes, you may not use the information that you hear right now, but you will use it at some time. For example, we had someone that came on our show to talk about mortgages, And it didn't happen right away that he got someone to get a mortgage from him, but he did 2 months later. Mm-hmm. And he credited us with that. So that was great. And of course, I prepped for today's show. I've been trying for the longest while to get my friend Liz Mkhitaryan on this show, because not everyone puts themselves out there in the public to do something for everybody else. And she did. When she saw that there was something going on in town with education, where the right for every child to have a quality public education, when Liz saw that that was not happening in Brevard because of people who clearly has a different agenda, she jumped into the fray and started her group here to stop Moms for Liberty. And I've been trying to get on the show for a while, and I'm so grateful she'll be on the second segment. Liz is an educator, and God has given her a bold heart and a fierce heart, and one filled with love and compassion for all human beings. And I'm so proud of you. You're my friend, and you're on the show today.
Thank you.
Yeah. Our first segment is a repeat guest who's also a wonderful friend. And Ellen, you know Dr. Martha Joseph Watts, and who wouldn't remember her on our show talking about Ayani the alligator?
Yes.
And how she uses all these different concepts and ideas as an educator and an author and another wonderful human being who cares not just about children right here in the United States, but all over the world. And she has developed all these techniques to help educators as well as parents and students to perform and excel and do well. And again, Martha knows no bounds. She has no boundaries when it comes to education. And she's on the phone. I know she's pulling off the road to chat. So Dr. Martha Watts, take it away.
Hi, good afternoon, Sita. How are you?
We are wonderful.
And my birthday twin.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you for taking the time to call in today on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I know you've been doing a lot of stuff with writing, and you had your podcast. You've been traveling a lot back and forth. Bring our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends up to speed about what you've been doing and the latest books you have written and all the concepts that you're coming up with to help with education.
All right. Thank you so much, Tita, for having me and Ellen. And I know it's been a while. I've been on here, but thank you so much for this opportunity. Yes, you know that I have had the writing to respond process where I focused on supporting writing in classrooms. But most recently, I had an opportunity last April to work with, in Brevard schools, I got an opportunity to, as a business person and as a former language arts teacher and as someone who also worked at the university level, I had an opportunity to go to a fair where they were teaching students. And I remember sitting at the Titusville Chamber of Commerce Education Committee meeting, and they had, everybody was, you know, calling out for all the other aspects, and nobody thought of the application letter. And I kept saying, well, you know, students are not able to, some of them do not even know what that is. I actually work with, at that time I was teaching at the university level, and I was teaching the application letter, and I realized that even some of them were not able to, they didn't really think it was important. So when I had that opportunity to attend the fair, I realized out of the 70 kids that we spoke with, just about 10 of them they said, okay, yes, I know what the application letter is, but they didn't even think it was important. And so that's where the need came from. When I saw the gap between the high school and the college, where students didn't think that that letter was important. So I wrote that latest book, A Letter to My Boss, and what I focused on was the idea that the application letter is an opportunity to present yourself to your future employer. And one of the reasons, there's a statistics, survey that was conducted in 2024, where it said that 95% of hiring managers look for the application letter, although it is optional.
Yes, yes.
And I had to, yeah.
Well, that's how you're introducing yourself to...
That's right.
And it's like us in the Caribbean, you know, we talk. We'll just go and say, hey, my name is Sita, and I'm from a village, and blah, blah, blah. And you communicate that way. But here in the United States, people don't do that. It's a huge country with 50 states, and people don't have time to drive from here to wherever and sit and talk and bring a piece of roti and something and talk to someone. So you have to introduce yourself through a letter. Or nowadays, you could do it through video, or you could do it, you know, through FaceTime. But you're absolutely correct. Intelligent people are looking for open lines of communication to read, and then you'll get your feedback.
Yes, and especially now that we have where people can just go into AI and just give you a generic resume. And so I said to my students, hey, I have 20 of you in my classroom. All of you are 4.0. What if I had one job to give away? Whom am I going to give it that to? And I want them to understand that the cover letter, even if it's optional, it is an opportunity for you to present yourself, because you've got to be the flamingo among all the pigeons. Mm-hmm. How are we going to know that you stand out? It's about talent, but it's about being able to communicate both orally and in writing. And so I wrote that book, and it is really a gap for maybe 11th, 12th, the college, all the way up to sophomore even, they can make use of that. Because I would say that I address the letter of intent. If you want to go to a college, if you want to transfer, I saw how difficult it is to transfer from one school to another. A lot of times students would think that, oh, I just want to tell them how bad that college was, why I have to leave. No. You want to tell them, I'm leaving my college because, you know, I was not able to get everything I needed to do what I need to do. And your college, I think, has the program that's going to support me. It's not about bashing one to go into another. And so what I think is, kids are just feeling, because I had a bad experience with Sita, I'm going to tell Ellen all the things I have with Sita, hoping that Ellen would hire me. But Ellen is going to say, huh, how is she going to treat me if I step on her toe? So the idea is to say, well, I worked with Sita, and then things didn't go well because she didn't have everything I needed, and so I'm coming to you.
Right.
So and I want to teach you.
Right. And sometimes that's what they call, like, when you have a job, which a lot of people don't do it, but they have it like an exit interview. Mm-hmm. And they ask you face-to-face, why are you... So you're saying, and for example, you know, you hear a lot of kids would say to their parents, I want to do this and this and this, and achieve so and so and so, because when I write my letter to get into college, I want people to celebrate my achievements, and I also want to be part of the community that I'm going to be going to school at. So what you're doing, you're saying to the students, if you did something on a Saturday morning, if you did something after school, that's yours, you own it. So put it down in writing in your letter.
Yes, and another thing Sita, is kids are saying, oh, all of these applications are saying they need experience, and I don't have any experience. And I said to them, yes, you do. You probably didn't work for pay, but you probably took care of your baby sisters at home. You're applying to a daycare to work for some internship. You can say that you are the eldest, and this is what you did. Or your father has a lawn mowing business, and you were lawn caring. Students need to learn that experience doesn't always mean paid work. It means, have you had any kind of exposure in what you are asking to do for me? And I should be able to tell you, hey, this is what I've done on that particular level, and I'm applying to you so I can get better at it.
Right.
They just need to learn to know what words to use so that they can grab the attention of either the institution of learning or that future boss. And that's what this book is about.
Well, you know what it is too, like the leadership qualities you see in firstborns. You see that, especially the eldest girl, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you're born with these leadership qualities to help enough to help. And so you're so right, because I never had anyone eloquently speak about that in such a way that your internship, being the eldest sister or the eldest brother or the one in the middle or whatever, each child in that family does not get paid for what they do. But you're so right. Mm-hmm. I never thought about it. But they could list that on a letter that they're writing for a job, or maybe you're writing a letter for college, or maybe you're running for office. Because oftentimes we put so much emphasis on academics and trade and military and all that. But you're so right. You hit the nail on the head. It happens at home as well.
Yes, definitely. And so I really want students to be able to understand the value of that. And then I know AI is big, so I have an entire chapter on AI. I want students to know that you shouldn't have to feel like you're cheating to use AI. There's a correct way to use it. And so in that, there's a chapter teaching them how to create your profile, tell AI all about you so that AI can support you in writing what you do. In other words, I create my piece, I put it in there, I told you who I am, everything about me, and now help me write something that portrays me well. So we want to make sure that we teach them to use it the right way and not feel like, oh, I'm stealing a chance to do that, you know? And so I have an entire chapter in there that deals with how to utilize AI effectively.
Yeah, and what you do with learning, what I understand, is that you are one of those educators that you embrace fun in learning. You're going to use technology with learning. You could use AI with learning. And you make it so interactive that someone actually wants to sit down and learn something. And I think that's something that should be worldwide, because we're seeing the shift from the classroom to other ways of learning. And I think they're going to have to, I mean, like what you're saying, like the minority population, for example, a lot of them don't have a mommy or daddy or money to send them to summer school, but they are at home taking care of their little brothers and sisters. They are playing school at home. They have a chalkboard, and they're teachers in their own right. And you are taking all of that and you're making it very effective for people to learn.
Definitely. Well, thanks. And I just want people to know that, you know, it was very surprising that even one of the teachers she's the one who conducted the fair. And she got a job and she said, you know what? I thought of you when I was applying for that job. And I went ahead, I looked back at the paper that you gave the kids, and I wrote an application letter. And she said, guess what? I got that job. And she said, after I got that job, I had an opportunity to take a look at the applicants, and I was the only one with a cover letter. So I really want people to understand that the application letter makes a difference. It you are taking the opportunity to say, I have done some research on your company. I know who you are. This is what you said. This is what you said you're going to offer me. And I need your help in making sure that I can get to that one day. And also what I have, I can offer that to you as well. In other words, I have something for you, you have something for me. You know, we're sharing our compatibility. And I just want people to understand that the application letter, whether you're asking for a raise or you're asking for a transfer or you're asking for an internship, and I cannot tell you how fulfilling it would be. When I worked at the university down from your area, I worked at Florida Tech for a little bit and for a few years. And the senior students, especially, when they would come to tell you that I got the internship, it always boils down to the cover letter.
Yes.
And they would tell you.
For listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Martha Joseph Watts.
Joseph.
I know Joseph. I'm like, where is my friend on Facebook? I can't find her. And then I'm like, okay, is it Martha Watts? Is it Martha Joseph? But I found you.
That's okay.
I just typed in Ayani, and there you were, an alligator. You came right up.
Nice.
But what I like.
Nice,
Go ahead.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing, though, it seems as though what you encourage students to do is to think forward, not backward.
Yes. And the other thing, you know, there was a misconception. Out of the 70 kids I spoke to on that day, because they came in groups of you know, 30s, of the 10 of them, the 10% or so who knew of the application letter, they said it was just this one letter that you write and you just copy it 6 times and you just send it out along with your resume. And I had to tell them, no. You must take a look at this institution every time, because you're not replicating your resume. You're looking for 2 skills that person wanted, that institution wants. And you're going to make sure that you tell them how you are prepared in education and in experience. And it's this 5-step process. And I go through it in that book and just let them know that they can do it every time. But just remember to go back to that letter for each person, because every company has a different model. Every company, every school has a different mascot. So you cannot treat the Panthers like the, you know, you can't do that, the Tigers. You got to make sure that you are letting that company know that I took the time out to know who you are.
Yeah.
And therefore...
And not only that, what you're doing too, you know, we all know the students that wake up in the morning and make their bed. And they make their bed, yeah, and they also put the dish in the dishwasher when they're finished. They wipe the table, they push the chairs in, they make sure that their environment is clean. And those students are taught by their parents or an elder or someone in their family, and they excel at what they do. And I think your cover letter give those type of students as well the ability to brighten up that gap between intelligence and talent. Because just a mere simple fact that you leave your bed made and your surroundings clean, that's a sign of intelligence, if you ask me.
Success.
Right?
Yes.
And that's you could see the difference. I you know, when you go to college, and I remember our kids would complain about their roommates who were very messy. It doesn't matter how well you do in life, if your surroundings is nasty and messy and smelly and you don't put your shoes properly, I mean, you could trip and fall. It's a night. The kids are all... So I think what you're doing in that cover letter, you're giving this person to say to this potential boss moving forward, this is who I am from birth.
And I can help.
Help, and I'm going to be an asset to your company.
Definitely.
Which a lot of people don't think about a job like that. You'll have people that apply for a job just because it's going to pay the bills.
Yes. But
right?
Guess what, Sita? You know, there was another article that came out end of 2024 again, where these people, 800 hiring managers were surveyed. And they said that 55% of the time, these college graduates were keeping conversations and not making eye contact. 19% of them, they brought their parents to the interview with them. Another set of them, if they were virtually, they would turn their cameras off. They just did not know how to have a conversation outside of a question. So some people, they go online and they check to see what questions you might ask them if they're coming for a job on the radio. But if you were to just ask them basically, oh, so what was your favorite such and such school? They're lost. This is not even a question that requires any kind of, you know, intelligence. But because it's not rote, because it requires them to think on their feet, a lot of them fall through. And these are people with degrees. And so hiring managers are saying, they want more than grades. I want talent. I want people whom I can speak to at the coffee table. I can go into the coffee room and I can ask, how is your day? And you can answer me by looking at me. I want you to be able to. So in other words, can you make small talk as a person who is a 4.0? Can you make eye contact if you're in the elevator and I ask, how are you? Do you know how to answer if somebody's on the line in the store and ask you, how is your day? Can you look at the person to answer, not in a staring way, but in a way where you can actually keep a conversation. And that's what this book is teaching.
Right. Well, I think you're also creating, a supportive environment that values diverse perspectives. Because everyone who's working at a company or in that level, they've got people working with them or under them. And yes, you know, I heard once that sometimes it's good for managers to learn the names of the employees' children and say to them, how is Johnny doing today? That's small talk, but it means so much to that employee that you actually knows the name of the child. And I think those kind of things, it all ties into your cover letter that is not only about the 4.0, it's also about other aspects of life.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to your point too, Dr. Martha, about the cover letter, when you're investigating the companies, there sometimes are some buzzwords. And even though the companies may be manually having someone look at those cover letters, a lot of them are using AI to kind of do the first scrub. So utilizing, you know, buzzwords from each of those organizations or a place that you want to volunteer or a place that you want to be a part of, utilizing those buzzwords is going to give you an opportunity for it to at least give you a shot in that pile of applications or cover letters that come out. So, I think that's a great ad about saying that you want to, you know, don't print out the same letter six times. Make sure you make it custom for each.
Right. Yes.
Well, everybody's unique, right? Every individual is unique. And how wonderful it is if you could put that on paper, because you already have the GPA. And like you say, I know that in the past, and you hit it right on the head, in the islands, a lot of people would bring their parents with them to the job application and the interview. Because they couldn't speak for themselves. And so the parent had to say, this is what the child does, this is what the student did, this whatever, you know. And it happened a lot back. I know that for a fact. But listen, Dr. Martha, your ideas all went to ink. You've got such wonderful books on Amazon and elsewhere. Give our listeners...
and podcasts.
Give our listeners your website, where they can get your books, where they can listen to your podcast. And there's so many educators who are actually struggling that needs your ideas and how to move forward. So give us all that information.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Sarah. So I have buddingwriters.com. All of my books are available on there. But I haven't put up the letter to boss yet because it came out just on June 19th, which is last week Friday. But it will be there by tonight. And it's on Amazon, and what I encourage people to do is to buy it other places, like Barnes & Noble. If you have a Barnes & Noble in your city, and you say, okay, I need a letter to my boss, then the book is going to be everywhere. So you can, because I published with Ingram Spark, it's available to everybody. Target, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Amazon. So people usually run to Amazon, but you can get it almost anywhere. Just go in and just tell them you want the book, A Letter to My Boss, and then you will be able to get it from there. But on buddingwriters.com, you will also get that. My Facebook page is buddingwriters, Dr. Martha J., or Dr. Martha J. alone, that's also there. But what I also want to do for educators and professionals is I realize that they have book ideas. And one of the things that I do, and I've been doing that for a while, if you're going to create a book idea, you want to be able to put exercises in there. So that book that I just created, if a group decides that they want to utilize that book, they have exercises where they can guide the students. They have opportunities to write cover letters. They have opportunities to write internships. They have opportunities to use AI. You always want to be able to put something in there, especially if it has to come from federal funding.
Yeah.
The federal government wants to know that the book is going to be a consumable. So you want to be able to do that. So what I've done is to put a course in place that's going to be 8 sessions, where if there's a professional or an educator who wants to put their idea to ink and make it be a consumable, I can guide them through that. And so I'm going to do my first cohort starting on July 6th to end on August 31st. 8 sessions, and I have a link on there that they can just click on it, and then it will take them directly to at least have that conversation with me first to see if I can support them. Because I don't want everybody just coming to click and say, hey, and register, and then I can't support you. I want to make sure I have that 15-minute consultation with you where I can hear what your idea is and see if I can walk you through that.
Yeah, and I think the
end
result too with you is to always boost student engagement. I like
always.
How you
always.
Yes, I think with you what we always hear from you, and it really comes from your heart. It's just you're so compassionate about it too. Is that you want people to use the different strategies that they have, but the end result should be how do we help this student to become a better person in our world, no matter where this person lives. And I think it shows through your writing. So my friend Liz is shaking her head because she is she's actually agreeing with everything you've said so far. She's also an educator. And do you have anything to add? Do you have anything? Yeah, tell Liz where your class is going to be held again and how someone can get on.
It's going to be virtual, but I will share it with you, Sita, so you can share it on your page. And there's going to be a link that we can chat first before I get them into the course. Because I really want it to be, I want to do cohorts of 20, and I want it to be successful. I want at the end of your 8th session, you have that book in your hand. So I'm going to walk you through. It's like a hand-holding session, 8 sessions, and I just want it to be you succeed. And that you can actually say, okay, a school with Title I funds or Title II funds can actually back from you. And
right.
That's what I want.
And
to
you know, we've got so many parents who are taking their children out of public schools now and homeschooling them. So I think that would be great for them as well, because at the end of the day, we pay taxes and we want to see our tax dollars used for a quality public education for all students. And how else to do that if we don't give them the tools that they need to engage the students, communicate with them, and use all these different methods? Because some children learn hands-on, some learn through technology, some learn on one-on-one, some need smaller classrooms. I think every child is different, and learning is different as well.
Definitely. Yes.
Well, I don't know what else to say.
Well, we have so many.
So awesome. I wish you were here in studio.
I know. I'm still an hour away. I didn't make it. I just came from something this morning.
So you had a lot of graduations. Who I know your family are such high achievers. Who graduated this one time?
My cousin, medical doctor. I took care of her when she was a child. And now she is a medical doctor. She's been working at it for a long time. I mean, thinking it.
That's right.
She is now a medical doctor. So I was just so thrilled. I had to make myself available. So I went over to Arkansas, and I'm back in Florida now.
So awesome.
And I head back down.
Well, we will make sure the world hears about the buddingwriters.com and all of your great information. Of course, I have a lot of
it, too,
that I can share extra.
Thank you. Yes.
We're going to take a quick minute. We're going to take a quick minute and listen to our sponsors. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9, that's cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a great first segment we had right here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And you guys are listening to us on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And Ellen, we are getting downloads from our show all over the world, right?
Anywhere from 15 to 18,000 people are downloading the show every single week, every time we post something. So that's a fantastic show statistics. And we're so appreciative of all of you out there who are listening to all the great things and the great entrepreneurs and authors and community leaders that are giving us this great information and great opportunity to be on Viewpoint.
Good people. You know, you in your 20s, you're soaring like an eagle. In your 30s, you're flying high. In your 50s, you're showing off to people, look at me. And in your 60s, you start coming down. In your 70s, you're firmly on the ground. And in your 80s, you're praying to God for a good send-off. Mm. Because you may live to be in the 90s or 100, but it might not be the same.
God willing.
America loves shiny things. America loves the young people. Yeah. America loves when you have a voice. And we all see it. You look at the World Cup and they're constantly putting the cameras on the beautiful women, right? And so when we're young and strong and able to give back, we should. Because when we get old in our 90s and 100, nobody wants to hear us. So that's why I'm glad we're still in our 50s and 60s and we're giving back, and 40s, right? So our second segment, Liz Mkhitaryan. I met her through so many wonderful groups here in town. Also, her wonderful husband gives back a lot through the hospital and all that. And it's amazing that you, Liz, took it upon yourself to not just love a community, but find a life with purpose in order to share education through what you learned as an educator and help us all here in Brevard. So talk to us a little bit about the Stop Moms for Liberty movement. Like the app Alexa says, you're a go-getter.
A go-getter. I have to laugh when you're talking about different decades for different parts.
Yes.
I'm in my 60s. I really thought I was going to be retired.
Right.
In the slowdown phase. Thank you for the introduction. And I am here in Brevard County, which is where Moms for Liberty was actually hatched in, I believe it was 2021.
Right.
And I actually tried to join them at first and, you know, have conversations about education. If these were, quote unquote, parents that were concerned about education, I wanted to get in the mix of that. I thought it was going to be great. But what happened almost immediately when I would say things like, okay, so that's not really what's happening in our schools, I became under attack. So I was called a child predator. And I was told that, oh, all of those years in kindergarten, you must have indoctrinated all those children. And of course, my feelings were hurt at first. But then I started thinking, okay, is this what their approach is going to be to attack? And as I reached out across Florida through different networks that I had, I found out that, yeah, that's what they were doing. They were going to the microphone at school board meetings. They were attacking educators, principals, you know, all staff. It grew into attacking librarians, as we've seen. And I thought, you know what? Someone needs to stop them. This Moms for Liberty movement, number one, is not grassroots, which I can talk about in a minute. But somebody needs to stop this blatant attack on public education, because the majority of people in this country have their children in public settings. And we need to protect that as a nation. I'm the first to say we need to improve in education, and I have good ideas. Your last guest talked about great ideas that we should be doing. Mm-hmm. But to undermine the whole concept of public education is really to undermine one of the foundations in our country.
Right. And you're an educator yourself. Mm-hmm. You've got a master's degree when mm-hmm. you taught school, mm-hmm. and you saw the disparities between the children as well.
It didn't used to be as bad, because the public system was a tool for evening the playing field. It truly was. And there wasn't the push towards haves and have-nots, which you spoke about earlier, that is currently in play. So we see things like the voucher system that is taking public dollars and pushing it into private settings. Well, most people can't afford those private settings. So what has happened in the voucher program, the, I don't know how much, $400 million or whatever, is that the people that were already in private settings are just getting the kickback.
Yeah,
so they're getting that voucher.
There has to be an advantage to why so much money is being taken out of the public school system and put into private schools that... Mm-hmm. Frankly, there is not enough oversight on those schools as there is on transparency with public mm-hmm. schools. So it used to be when you work hard and you pay your taxes, and that taxes went towards things like Medicaid, the military, law enforcement, postal service, you paid for healthcare, you paid for housing, and then you paid for the most sacred thing of all, education for our children, mm-hmm. our teachers and our schools. And the school was supposed to be a safe space for all children. Yeah. What has happened that all this money is being taken away from public school, fix the schools and pour money into all the zip codes? Mm-hmm. So what has happened?
Well, a prime example of how it went wrong is the grading system in schools and how money came behind those schools that scored higher, which is exactly opposite of what should have happened. The schools that are struggling should have been the ones that were getting supplements and things of that nature. But I believe that, and all of the documentation shows that this is a concerted effort that started more than 30 years ago. And it is to have either an educated population or a non-educated population.
But what would be the gain? What would be the gain for someone to do that? Because, I mean, think about it. You know, we live in a country where we're all diverse. Mm-hmm. We're Hindus, Muslims, Jews, Christian, blacks, whites, Chinese, whatever, different race, different nationalities. And once a child is born, everyone wants that child to have a fair start.
Not everyone. Life. Not everyone.
Really?
Yeah.
Is so sad.
If you read the book Cast, it really explains a lot of what's happening in the United States. And the billionaire class is who is really behind most of this. They have this white Christian nationalism push that they are pushing for. That's why you hear things like, oh, we're a Christian nation. And none of the documentation supports that. And we're seeing that it can only be one way, and that's not what our country is based on. Like you said, it's a big old salad bowl, and it can't just be that white Christians have most of the power And I'm a Christian saying that. So this isn't that I'm anti
and I love
anything.
Jesus. Yeah, I'm Hindu, yeah, but I'm a Hindu,
right?
For Jesus. Everybody knows that. But the thing is, what gets me is, you know, you've got so many people that want you to carry this child to full term.
Right.
They're so excited to see a pregnancy because there's a life behind it.
Right.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Baby showers and gender reveal and the kid is born.
We're pro-birth.
Right. But mm-hmm. once that child is born, that child needs an education. The parents need a place to live. They need mm-hmm. an affordable house, mm-hmm. a proper wage, health care, and most important, education and opportunities. So why? I don't understand the folks who write children off because of their skin color or their zip code. It should never be that way.
Never. And it unfortunately is. You see this in everything happening with immigration. We have been forced into being a country that sees otherness. And we can't have otherness because eventually we're all going to be in that other group. You know, I jokingly say, oh, when they decide that, you know, chubby retired kindergarten teachers are the target, you know, I'm messed up.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to support, as you said, the human rights of everyone, because once any group loses that, we're all going to suffer eventually. So it's just this major push. I was telling your folks earlier that there's a document that I would love people to look up. It's a movement, and it's called the Seven Mountains Mandate. And this is the basis of everything that we're seeing happening in our country right now. It's not conspiracy theory that I'm spewing. It's actually out there. If you Google it, you can pull up everything. And it's the extreme right Christian nationalism push. They even have camps out west where they bring people in and they train them to follow this doctrine.
Well, they indoctrinate their minds.
Well, they are. And it talks about the seven different pillars that are part of a society that will allow that group, that white Christian nationalist extremist group, to take over the country. And one of those pillars is education. And my contention has been that they've gone after education first because it was the lowest hanging fruit. They did things like Moms for Liberty sat school board members because it was easy to get those elections taken care of because no one used to pay attention to school board elections. And you get folks in the seats of power in education. I mean, honestly, our national secretary of education is from the wrestling world.
Right. And then you
I mean, that speaks volumes about the importance of education in America.
A lot of us were concerned when we see people getting a position of power with no education or experience mm-hmm. in that field.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how? Why?
There's a pattern.
Where? Right. So, I mean, this all started when we saw the book banning.
Yes.
And I remember reading To Kill a Mockingbird when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot from that book. And that's one of the books that's banned. We also had Tina Deskovich on our show, and she spoke about some of the books that were banned. And most logical...
Did she admit that they were banned? Because they like to say, oh, no, we're not banning books.
I don't remember what we talked about, but I do remember saying that a lot of us do believe that books should be appropriate for children at mm-hmm. a certain level.
Mm-hmm. And I do as well.
And we agree with that. So what happened at... I mean, as it is...
Well, just like the rating system for movies, right? I mean, they have a G, they have an R, you know, obviously. So
right.
If they have to do that, I understand that part of it. I don't understand mm-hmm. the banning part.
And it's interesting you said that because there are systems in place that designate what grade levels
exactly.
books are for.
But somehow the messaging was lost. Like the people who knew that, they didn't have a powerful enough voice to come forward and say, hey, there is a rating system.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that got lost.
Here in Brevard County, they even instituted a citizens oversight, I guess I'll call it, team mm-hmm. that was to review books. Well, they didn't like the outcomes of some of those things. So our current school board members decided, well, we'll be the ones to decide what books are in our schools. Well, then you have an example of one of those sitting board members got a list out of somewhere west in Florida, I want to say Tampa area, of 300 and some odd books. And he said, well, let's just get rid of all of these. That's not process. That's not looking at the quality or the lack thereof of any kind of materials that we give to our kids. Instead, it's, oh, you know, they're trying to indoctrinate the kids, like they said about me. Oh, they're trying to push an agenda. No one's pushing an agenda into the public schools. There is diversity coming into the public schools.
Right.
And public schools have a mission to meet every child's needs that come through the door. So, you know, I use the example of the LGBTQ plus community. They say, oh, well, schools are indoctrinated. No, that's a community that has always existed, and they are part of our schools. So, yes, inclusion is including that. So, you know, there's a lot of this pushback, but I like to say that the book banning and the attacks on librarians was the biggest mistake that Moms for Liberty made. Because even in our organization, I got about 10,000 new members just when that all started across the country. And it's just something that America as a whole does not believe in, that you should outright ban a book. They like to come back with either, oh, we're not banning it, you can still buy it. They don't understand that the access to books in schools is non-discriminatory. It's the only place where some kids might be having access to books because they can't afford to just go out and buy it on Amazon. So a lot of their response has been very flippant about book banning. But again, I think they really went down the wrong road on that. Right.
And one of the things I love, because I, you know, obviously I've done a little bit more research since I knew that you were coming on the show. But the one of the things that you say on the website, too, is that there is no teacher shortage. There's a lack of respect.
Yes.
Right. There's a lack of compensation. There's a lack of safety and autonomy for educators and for staff mm-hmm. in general. So that speaks volumes,
right?
You know, that we don't have a lack in teachers, right?
Well, it always goes back to who has the loudest voice
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
who gets the ear of the politician.
Mm-hmm.
Because you often hear about public education versus parents' rights, parental rights. My children mm-hmm. went to public school. They went to Delora, they went to Holland, and they went to Satellite High.
Mm-hmm.
That was a public school, all three. I had no mm-hmm. issues. If the children had to learn about comprehensive sex education, they sent home a form. If yep. you want to sign it, you sign it. Yep. I, up to today, with four children in Chicago, Indiana, and Brevard Public Schools, I have never bat an eyelash about the school because I trust the teachers. I trust the educators.
Or you had a relationship
right.
and knew and were involved.
Right. And so if they had something that I could attend, I made sure I attended.
Mm-hmm.
But I think... what was left out of this conversation, you often hear about, oh, they're going to indoctrinate my child to be part of the LGBTQ community. No. If you're teaching your child about comprehensive sex education, you have the option to sign that form or not,
mm-hmm.
right? And so mm-hmm. where did that come from, that little Johnny and Susie are going to be indoctrinated to use the same bathroom and all this? It all about the noise. Talk about that noise a little bit.
Well, and I just want to throw in one thing. If you have cable TV at your house, that argument is off the table because they're exposed to LGBTQ and all that stuff.
I want to know what happened with our schools because mm-hmm. that never happened in Brevard. But yet still, it was amplified by people mm-hmm. who feel that's what teachers, first grade teachers are doing.
Yeah.
No, I want to say it never happened.
It was amplified very intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
These were talking points. They stumbled on not only LGBTQ, but they stumbled most on the trans community, which is the least understood piece of the LGBTQ plus community. And it was a development of fear against our public school system. And to say that children are being indoctrinated to be gay, sorry, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
So, you know, we have to be practical about that. You talked about a lot about parents' rights, and I want to address that. That's really key. Moms for Liberty was developed under that premise of you're a parent, you have rights, we're going to stand up for your rights, we're going to get you your rights. They've actually had legislation passed
in many of the states,
mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
What have parents gained? And the answer to that is nothing that they didn't already have. So when they talk about access to curriculum, parents have always had access to curriculum.
Yeah, I remember.
If they choose to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Access to, you know, teachers.
Or the library.
You could always contact
parents
the teachers.
Parents always had access to the library. And if you're a good parent and you're a parent who paying attention, when the kids brought books home, you picked up the book and you read about the author and what the book was about.
And if you didn't like it, you had a discussion with the child.
Correct.
And then with the teacher and say, hey, I don't want them learning this. So that teamwork piece has been dissolved by this false narrative of the schools don't want to work with parents. That is so far from the truth. We encourage, and I say we as a former educator, but we encourage parents to be our partners, but that's not what's being pushed by the other side. It's let's be antagonistic against the schools, let's share false information, and let's convince a group of people across the country that they don't have rights as a parent, so they need their little organization and their membership in that organization to get them rights when they've always had all of the rights that they
think they're getting. The key to life is education, right? And I think if parents and taxpayers mm-hmm. are educated about these vouchers and where the money goes,
yeah.
and the loudest voices getting the politician ear, and then you talk about being inclusive. I mean, we were all taught that if two kids are on the playground and one pushed the other, a teacher would step in and say, please don't do that, be kind. What has happened to our nation that you're now taking funds out of a public school and giving it to a private entity, and no one is asking what they're doing with the funds when they get it in the private schools?
Accountability is definitely an issue. There's some, but is nowhere near the amount of accountability that the public school system has. So when your tax dollars go to a setting, and there's also a piece of that that I wanted to approach too. People always say, well, it's my tax money and I should get my tax money back if I'm not going to use the public school system. I actually think that would be a good idea. Most people only get like three grand or less that they pay out in taxes towards education. And if you give that back to them, that's not going to get their child educated, that amount of money. So what they're fundamentally doing is taking my taxes and your taxes to pay for their private setting.
And that's not okay. Right. And the other thing, too, the children who are homeschooled, mm-hmm. they still get access to the schools.
Yes,
the library
they do.
And extracurricular yep. and all that. So it really feels like that's it's like a message that a lot of us have to start saying that, hey, if there's mm-hmm. a sidewalk in front of a certain school that's the concrete is up and you have to fix it so the kid don't fall, mm-hmm. pour money into that public school.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pour money into that school for the teachers, mm-hmm. For mm-hmm. educators, for social workers. I mean, it doesn't make sense taking the money out of the public school, the community school, and putting it into a private school.
And I will say that the current board is not doing anything about that situation. They're allowing it to happen. They're actually rubbing elbows with Brian Donalds running for governor. That is a full proponent of moving public dollars into private settings.
We all support
His
choice.
His wife runs
we,
private
settings.
We support
settings. Choice, but we also have to be educated on
well,
where our money is going.
Well, choice has to be an equal access
right.
issue.
Right.
So if all children do not have that choice, then it's not really a choice.
That's right.
It's segregation. It is this haves and have-nots, and it's building a caste system of the highly educated will then control those that don't have the access to education that all kids
now
deserve.
Now, who's running in our area here that we should pay attention to?
In our school board, we have three seats that are open. So in essence, we can have a new majority on our school board. I personally support Tara Gibson in the North End. In seat two, which is Cocoa, Canaveral, that area, I support Kelly Wentworth. And then in D5, down in the Palm Bay area, I support Cecilia Trotter.
Awesome. And they're all coming on our show, which is, I wish you could come
great.
Back then. And how can someone join Stop Moms for Liberty?
We have a .com, so stopmomsforliberty.com. So that's our website. And then from there, you can actually link into state-level groups. There's an interactive map there where you can join at the state level. And we're moving and shaking, and
yeah.
it's been done with no money. We're not a 501c3. We'll never ask for money. And it's fundamentally just a grassroots movement who have all said enough is enough. And we support our public schools.
And there are 30 people running for governor.
Yeah.
30 people have qualified to run for governor.
Well,
so start your education.
Well, Liz McEtarian, you are a role model for so many of us who are sitting on the fence and trying to decide which platform we should jump on.
Mm-hmm.
And you have put yourself and your body and your family and your reputation at stake to fight for the people who are unable to fight for themselves. And the least they can do is vote.
Well, and if we don't change the school board, then the trajectory is not good for Brevard Public Schools.
Do your education, folks. We got an election coming up. We need you. Go out and vote. Make sure you're registered and make sure that you vote. If you want any more information, the websites and all the great information that both of our guests posted are going to be on our website as well as all of our social medias. Thanks again for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Please